AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions. We're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Did the solid price recovery in commodities have anything to do with the sell-off in equities? What do you have to know before tomorrow's USDA reports? After the reports, what will traders be focused on? What risk management moves should you know right now? Those are just some of the questions, and we'll get you the answers.
Live from the return of Turnaround Tuesday, Bulls Revenge, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we talk with Rich Nelson from Allendale. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, Rich Nelson. It feels like a great opportunity to get him on in front of another big report and lay the groundwork. What should we expect, Rich? How should we prepare for it? What do you see happening coming out of the reports? I think Rich is a good one to get on for a day like today. In front of Davis, I people have heard us say this before, but it's just another reminder. Tomorrow is the first official look at the new crop marketing year for the for the major crops. And when we're getting that kind of a report, these are benchmark numbers.
Okay.
These are estimates from USDA's World Ag Outlook Board that will be a point of comparison from now until this time next year. I mean, we still look back at those first numbers that we got on the 2020-21 marketing year when we were expected to have, you know, nearly 3 billion bushels of corn left over at the current marketing year, like 600 million bushels of soybeans left over at the end of the current marketing year. And look at where we're at now. And it's that change from the benchmark numbers to where we are now that have driven some huge, monumental changes in price and in attitude in these markets. So
I'll be looking in today's conversations for things like somebody's going to be surprised, which side of the canoe everyone may or may not be on. My early prediction for tomorrow is that no one will be surprised.
Oh, really?
How do you like them apples? I don't think that's ever been said on this show before. I just wanted to say that.
So
I have no basis for that, but I did say it first. Mark it down, Joe.
Because you know I'm not writing that one down. So if somebody's got to write it down, it probably better be Joe.
Joe will do it. Attaboy, Joe.
How you doing, Davis?
Super fantastic. The sun is shining. Good. I had a great lunch. Super productive day so far. It's about to go dramatically downhill after the show. But until then, yes, you've got my best. Up until then.
Okay.
Sir.
Okay. I don't even know if I want to know what happens after the show.
I don't know what might happen, but it just feels like I've just put so much into this day so far. You know, it just at some point you realize I've left it all on the field. Just,
dude, you're
just
living to work.
Down.
You're living to work and working to live, aren't you?
I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
Gotcha. All right, man. Hey, let's get to it. What do you got in the news?
Well, Chip, wheat futures posted solid gains, but winter wheat futures just got back about half of what was lost yesterday, and spring wheat futures can't even make that claim. In all three markets, futures posted a low-range open and a high-range close, pointing the way to the upside. Winter wheat crop conditions improved slightly in yesterday's update from USDA, and the weather forecast suggests good growing conditions for the near term. Different story for spring wheat. Dry conditions expected to continue in the northern plains and in the Canadian prairies. July hard red winter wheat, 7 cents higher, 7.10 and 1/2. July soft red gained 11 and 1/4 to close at 741 and 3/4. September spring wheat, 16 and 1/4 cents higher, 774 and 1/2, Chip.
Yeah, the chart outlook for this wheat market right now, and I'm looking at July SRW, It's a heck of a wide range. I mean, basically 710 to 770, okay? But we've been trapped in that range for about a month now, and we always talk about how it's not any single event that puts a top in the market or a bottom in a market. It's a process, and it's a test of the high, a test of the bottom end of the range. Well, it's starting to look like maybe – because of the volatility that's in that wheat market, that it's working on doing some kind of a top. Now you get a close above 770, and all bets are off, and things are pointing back to the upside. But for right now, a lot of choppy action in here.
December corn futures opened slightly lower and slipped back to test buying interest at the $6 level. That's when professional trading funds stepped up to defend long positions, pulling prices to the plus side of unchanged. USDA this morning announced the sale of 680,000 metric tons of corn for delivery to China in the new crop marketing year. As of May 9, USDA says two-thirds of the U.S. corn crop is planted, 15 points ahead of the five-year average pace. Quick progress for the U.S. is being offset by Brazil's drought and declining corn crop potential. July corn futures 10.5 cents higher, 7.22 1/4. September corn gained 6 cents, 6.35. December corn closed at 6.11 1/4. That's up 2 cents today.
Yeah, four sessions in a row. Big move yesterday, big move today, and four sessions in a row with July corn on both sides of 720. With those big moves in there, that's a market that has obviously turned to a very choppy pattern and kind of a sideways trading range until we get USDA's numbers tomorrow.
As of Sunday, USDA says 42% of the U.S. soybean crop was planted. That's 20 points ahead of the five-year average. Generally strong demand and above-average basis levels are limiting selling interest in bean futures, and traders expect USDA to trim slightly the old crop soybean carryover in tomorrow's supply and demand report. Old crop beans led today's price advance, and November bean futures opened lower, dropped back to test buying interest at $14 and rallied sharply to post an upside reversal. July bean futures 27.25 cents higher today, 6.14 3/4. August up 24 3/4, 15.53 1/2. Novi beans closed at 14.31 1/2. That's up 17 1/4 cents. Chip.
Yeah, July beans traded to 16.25 1/2 today, posted an upside reversal, new contract high close, big move in old crop beans.
USDA says 25% of the cotton crop was planted as of May 9. That's a point behind the five-year average. December cotton futures spent the entire session lower on the day, but did bounce off support at 85 cents. July cotton 72 points lower, 87.75. December cotton fell 57 points to 85.53. On the livestock side, front-month live cattle futures gapped higher, fell back to fill the gap, then rallied back to close slightly above the opening range. June live cattle were 40 cents higher, 118.62 1/2. October cattle jumped $1.60, 126.15. And despite higher corn prices, Chip, August feeders found a way to close 15 cents higher, 148.85. And finally, June lean hog futures traded into the May 3 upside price gap and posted a third consecutive lower close, but did respect support at the bottom of that gap. June lean hogs 92.5 cents lower, 111.17 1/2. August down $1.35, 106.75. Chip.
All right. And stocks off sharply right now. Violence heating up in Tel Aviv right at this moment. So, boy, what kind of impact is that having on the commodity world? We'll find out from Rich Nelson at Allendale next, right here on AgriTalk. Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to Agri Talk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We had solid gains in corn, soybean, soybean meal, soybean oil, winter wheat, spring wheat, live cattle. Feeder cattle slightly higher, and lean hogs were under pressure today. We also had cotton under pressure, but coffee was higher. Sugar was higher. The last I looked, lumber futures were lower, but back on session highs and actually trading above the opening range. Gains in crude oil, heating oil, unleaded gas. And I guess no surprise there. If you guys did not hear this morning's show about the impact of the shutdown of the Colonial Pipeline, we had on Phil Flynn from Price Futures Group, we had on Emily Score from Growth Energy, and we had on Jordan Fife from Bioerja Group out of Houston, and they all did a fantastic job of putting it in perspective for us and looking forward, really looking forward to what might happen coming up next. I hadn't even, you know, when Jordan said something about fuel importers, when they import those gallons, that they have blending obligations on those gallons. It was like, oh, what's that going to do to RINs? What's that? Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
You can download the AgriTalk app wherever you get your favorite apps and such. Download the podcast itself wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And as I understand, it's also at Ag Hall of Fame Radio shows.ag.net.zip if you care to go there and check it out.
I don't think that's might such be a there. Thing. I don't think that's such a thing. But if you want to go to agritalk.com, you can find it there. Yes.
Oh, there too. Absolutely. Sure, why not?
All right. Rich Nelson is the chief strategist at Allendale Inc. He joins us right now. Rich, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Good talk with you guys. Hope you're doing well.
Yes, we are. We are. Okay. We're going to do some looking forward to the supply and demand report. But first, on a day like today, I kind of got to ask just a money flow question, really, is what it comes down to. It feels like some geopolitical pressure on the equities trade, on stocks. But as that money's coming out of the stocks, did it get to the long side of commodities?
That's a very, very big question. I don't have an answer. I do know a lot of people are suggesting it is. So this is a very valid discussion point. At this point in time, I cannot pinpoint, quote unquote, inflationary support or artificial price support in these markets beyond what we can see with psychology based on the Brazilian issue and some other factors. So I can't pinpoint it, but I agree that it could be there.
So I think what I hear you saying is based on the fundamentals, the uncertainty of that crop out of South America, I'll call it the stocks to use ratio on old crop, corn, soybeans, wheat. What you're saying is that what we've got for old crop prices, they seem pretty justified. They seem fair market.
I actually will say that, yes. And here's why. So we're looking at drops so far out of Brazil of the equivalent of roughly 200 to 500 million bushels. We can argue about how that's going to be distributed between July or December contract, old or new crop. We can argue that's probably a bit off on the July contract especially. But there is this discussion of a need to psychologically, at least right now, distribute this somehow into the corn market. I'm not getting too excited about it. I've got one floor source who's even talking now sub 90 million tons for Brazil's total corn crop. I think that's maybe a bit outlandish, but I think we can all agree that there is a need to distribute some type of psychological base support among the corn here.
Yeah, man, this has happened before where and it's been a while since we've lost those bushels out of South America, and it turns into a, it's a bigger deal than people anticipate it's going to be when the process starts, Rich. And if it turns into the kind of demand that we're seeing for old crop and new crop corn now, then that's when it really triggers and you got to pay attention to it, right?
That's certainly true. And to kind of go through the numbers, USDA is at 1.3 and change for last month for old crop. Nobody believes that. Most of us have been trading at 1.1, something like that, billion bushel crop. And that gets you $6 for July futures. But July futures are now pricing in an extra 300 million bushels, even more than us people who were bulls, you know, even more so. So I would probably argue perhaps new crop is where this, a lot of this should be placed. But I can't argue with the market's, belligerent belief of just saying, let's buy corn, let's buy July, and let's assume that goes into this contract right now.
Yeah, yeah. How much of an influence do you think that Brazilian crop is having on the Chinese purchases that over the last three business days total 3.06 million metric tons of new crop delivery corn?
I think it might be something because, you know, like you mentioned, we've got almost 3.1 million tons lined up now of new crop corn to China. Last year at this time, they only had 819,000 tons. So we are ahead of normal, even though most of us do expect some type of drop in total Chinese buys from us for the new crop year. But for right now, it's not yet here in the cards.
Okay, let's go over those numbers. For the 2020-21 marketing year, the current marketing year, what have you got in there for total Chinese corn imports?
Sure. So let's go through that here. So we've got, China's got 28 million tons plugged in for their import number. Of that, roughly 23 here for the U.S. Even if you argue a half million tons of total cancellations or something like that, that's not even 20 million bushels right there. For the new crop year, China suggests they'll drop down to 20 for total imports. For myself, I'm at 20 to 24. But as far as the U.S. discussion, we have that dropping from 23 old crop down to 17 to 20 new crop. So maybe we're looking at a 3 to 5 million ton drop in purchases from China. But so far, that's more than offset by the Brazilian discussion.
Yeah, right, right. You know, at the start of the show, Rich, I was talking about these benchmark numbers that we're going to be getting for the 2021-22 marketing year. You go back just 3 years ago. No, not even that far. You only got to go back 2 years ago. And I don't know anybody that expected China to buy over 25 million ton of 2020-21 crop corn. And certainly nobody was looking for 15 to 20 on the 21-22 crop. It's been such a change for this market going forward that I feel like we're still trying to adjust for Chinese buying.
We are. And, you know, China's got a really tough argument. I know you guys have talked about it quite a bit on your show, and we all understand that they have a tough argument with saying they're going to have an increase in feed needs for next year in terms of total calories and total protein. And they're going to try to make this happen without, by dropping imports, moving to substitutes, and a few other things. But we now have to question exactly how much of a drop in imports can they see is certainly a big question, which is still unknown right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's such an unknown, and it's going to have so much impact on our markets going forward. That obviously it's something that we have to pay very close attention to. Okay, we got very corn heavy on the conversation there, Rich. And I want to get a little more general for just another moment, if I could, because we do have the violence ramping up in Tel Aviv. We do have that activity with Iran boats in the Straits of Hormuz over the weekend, or I guess that was yesterday. Does it feel like a period of geopolitical uncertainty, tensions are coming back into this market?
It certainly could. And like you mentioned, we have seen that on some of the outside market discussions. It's not exactly something that us on the grain side are are seeing liquidation or hard liquidation out of contracts yet. So it's something we can't say is going to happen, but it's certainly we have to keep a close eye because the market may at some point, anytime, decide it is an issue. So that's certainly something we can't ignore, no.
Okay. Tell me about the funds in this corn market, because it just seems really strange to see their participation as heavy as it is, yet see very little movement on their positions.
And that's actually a really important point because I think it's kind of like we saw in the last stages of the 2012 rally, where for the last buck and a half of that 2012 rally actually was made with hardly any fund buying at all. In fact, we can argue some of the categories were seeing net declines, and at the same time, we were seeing open interest decline as well. So big questions here.
Yeah, geez, I can't believe the music is playing already. We're at the end of the first segment with Rich Nelson, Chief Strategist from Allendale Inc. We need to dig into some of these specific trade expectations for the supply and demand report. And, of course, what are we going to watch after the reports? How should we manage risk going into the reports? We'll find out from Rich next.
American-based and family-run, Simplot Grower Solutions knows what it takes to keep a farm and your way of life productive and thriving. It takes field-proven insights backed by trusted technologies and products that help you get the most out of every acre. It takes a local ag expert you can grow with, a down-to-earth partner focused on your success. Head to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com and take the next step with us. Simplot Grower Solutions, in your fields, by your side.
Radio. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. South American crop consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier drops Brazilian corn crop peg to 97 million metric tons. Cordonier also now projects Argentina's corn crop will total 46.5 million metric tons. That is a 1 million metric ton increase from the week before. HRW CCI ratings remain below average. SRW crop ratings remain above average. French seedings of corn, sugar beets, and spring barley are expected to fall from last year. Biden meets with Manchin on economic plan. Small business optimism up, but not as much as expected. Biden orders Labor Department to reinstate work search requirements, and U.S. consumers are bracing for higher prices. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. And we are in the middle of a conversation with Rich Nelson from Allendale. Before we get back to that, Davis, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat futures 7 cents higher today, 7.10 1/2. September spring wheat 16 1/4 cents higher, 7.74 1/2. July corn futures 10 1/2 cents higher, 7.22 1/4. December corn closed at 6.11 1/4. That's up 2 cents today. July soybean futures 27 1/4 cents higher, 16.14 3/4. November bean futures closed at 14.31 1/2. That's up 17 1/4 cents. December cotton down 57 points, 85.53. On the livestock side, October cattle jumped $1.61, 26.15. August feeders found a way to close 15 cents higher despite higher corn futures, 148.85 there. Good work, August feeders. August hogs fell $1.35, 106.75. That is your quick market recap. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Rich Nelson is the chief strategist for Allendale Inc. So, Rich, during the break there, I'm thinking to myself, okay, how does corn market do that? What you were talking about there at the end of the last segment, rally the last buck and a half without a lot of speculative support, fund-based buying in that market. I mean, is it the commercials? Is it end users that are saying, I give up, I got to get coverage, doesn't matter what's going on? Where are we in that process?
And that's a really good point. And the main argument we can say is it's in most cases liquidation. People finally, getting out of the last short, so to speak. So yes, we can rally, and we can rally a long time on that ugly phase of movement. So definitely some big questions there.
You know, basically what you said is you run out of sellers, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. What is the situation for the end users, Rich? It feels like they've been scrambling to catch up with this market since August.
And they have been. And certainly based on basis, you know, every cash market discussion we kind of look at still is suggesting these people are quite concerned. And on top of that, we now have a farmer who says, I'm going to close my bin doors. I don't exactly have a price in mind. I'll just decide later on when to sell it at some point. So end users are in a tough situation. No doubt.
Yeah, they are. Okay. In April from USDA, we got on corn carryover 1.352 billion bushels. The average trade guess going into the report tomorrow is 1.275 billion bushels. So basically 75 million bushels down from USDA in April. And that's on the old crop. What do you think? Do you got the over or the under on 1.275?
We are just a little under that. We're at, in this case, actually, I should mistake that. We're just a little over 1.282. So we do think that based on the mechanical nature of how USC does this May report, we're set up, I agree, with a roughly 75 million bushel drop. And the big numbers, I'd say we're not going to see anything realistic from USDA until August here. So it's a show number from USDA for right now.
Okay. That's disappointing because it makes it difficult to manage risk on old crop.
It is.
And I agree with what you said. Guys have got corn in the bin, and it's going to stay there until they get the price that they think is right. But that's disappointing. And plus, it just fails to send signals on a timely basis to the market, Rich. They need to be out in front of this kind of thing, not waiting.
Yes. And for you guys who are listening, let me put this in perspective so you understand the severity of how the analyst side are just kind of playing with numbers right now.
Yep.
USDA is at 1.3 and change for old crop. This July futures contract is priced as though we'll be down about roughly 850 million bushels. So futures are trading a 500 million bushel different number than USDA is. Most of us on the analyst side up until 2-3 weeks ago, we were saying maybe down to 1.1. So we are talking of some big discrepancies versus realistic that it's going to take USDA months to get in line with here.
Yeah, and it's that change in that South American supply that takes down to that 850 number that we might be trading in here. It's crazy, dude. It's absolutely crazy. Do we see any kind of movement on the export number? When we go back to April on the old crop, we had the exports at 2.675 billion bushels. Is there going to be any movement there?
There has to be. So really up until maybe 2 weeks ago, a lot of us and myself were arguing for probably a 200 million bushel overage over what USDA had been saying. And I will say in just the past 2 or 3 weeks, we can probably argue we might not hit that amount. Maybe it'll be 160, maybe it'll be plus 180. So maybe we're not at 200. But on the other hand, with this big unknown of will we have a Brazil-based change on the poor export sales side in recent weeks. I'm not sure. So a lot of questions there.
Okay. All right. Got to pay attention to it. On new crop, 2021-22, the average trade guess going into it for corn on carryover, 1.344 billion bushels, over or under?
Now, on my end, I'm just a little bit under that. I'm at 1.233, so roughly 100 million bushels difference. And I will let everybody know there's easily a 500 million bushel sway in a lot of these numbers. So let's not get too attached to what USDA gives us for a poster number for tomorrow's number.
Let's make sure that everybody understands we're going to be working with the planning intentions, prospective plantings report for the planted number. We're going to be working with trend line yields. USDA is going to deviate from that in this update, are they?
And that's a question. So you, in the past decades, plural, USDA was active in changing yields on the May report with planning progress. Interestingly enough, they didn't do that at all since 2014 to current.
Right.
So most of the trade does feel trend yields we posted, so we'll have a low number posted for supply on corn. But I think a lot of us could argue that's a little cushion, like you mentioned, with maybe a little higher acres down the road and above trend until we know more otherwise.
Okay. All right. Let's go on to soybeans here. In April on old crop, carryover was estimated at 120 million bushels. The average trade guess now is 117 million bushels. So down just a bit. Same question, over or under?
Yeah, and I don't think any major change. We're at 115 on this one. The issues for the soybean side are July futures are now pricing in sub 100 million bushel stocks. That's where this July contract is at. On the tough end of things, if we're looking at export sales, crush, I can't quite make that happen. But on the other hand, I'm not going to argue with this market here in the short term yet.
Okay. This is a good time to bring up soybean oil. Have you ever seen a market like this bean oil market?
Oh, son of a gun. What do you say about this? This is just ridiculous.
I mean, maybe lumber. You could look over at lumber and say, okay, there's a comparison. Yeah. But it's just phenomenal. And what the renewable biodiesel has done for that and just general consumption and demand for it. Very, very impressive. Okay, on the new crop, the average trade guess for 2021-22 bean carryover, 138 million bushels. What do you think?
We're right there. We're at 129. So okay. USDA has a mechanical nature in this report. Like you mentioned, same acres as the prospective plantings. They never have changed yields on this specific report different than trend. So most of us are plugging in trend, despite the fact we do have a record planting pace. So it's kind of a tough deal for what USDA will show here.
Yeah, okay. You know, one thing that we haven't talked a whole lot about is that we also get the winter wheat crop production report coming our way tomorrow. For winter wheat, the average trade guess is 1.256 billion bushels. It's not much of a crop when you get right down to it, is it, Rich?
No. In fact, my number 1.260 right there as well. And so you guys to see how we're taking some very light numbers off here. I took about 2% off my winter wheat numbers, which based on current conditions, that could change dramatically. And heck, what we plug in for spring wheat, that's a whole different story. I'm not quite sure I got answers for that one just yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't even ask the question, Rich. It's that uncertain when it comes to what that spring wheat crop is going to be. Are you feeling any urgency to get risk protection, risk management in place before the numbers tomorrow?
For myself, no. We might have a 1 to 3 day break just on quote unquote disappointment from USDA not fulfilling the Super Bowl's hopes. Maybe we'll break a couple days. I don't know. I don't think we have the news flow yet needed to change this market. And that is a change in the Brazilian forecast. We will see some improvement on the U.S. numbers with moisture coming in next week. I agree with that argument. But we haven't solved the main arguments that this market is rallying on.
Okay. At 11:10 tomorrow, what's going to be the main focus?
It probably will be a number one starting point for a Brazilian corn crop number. Number two will probably, in my viewpoint at least, be the new crop corn and soybean stocks.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Rich, this was fun, man. You covered a lot of ground today. Thank you, buddy. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, guys. Look forward to talking with you next time.
You bet. You bet. Absolutely. That is Rich Nelson. Rich is the chief strategist for Allendale Inc. You know, one number that I did not mention that I feel like I need to get out there, or a couple of numbers, I guess. The average trade guess on old crop wheat carryover is 846 million bushels. That would be down from 852 million bushels. And then jumping into the new crop marketing year, 730 is the average trade guess on wheat carryover. And then on cotton, you know, we're looking for that movement from last month's 3.9 million bale carryover estimate. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up here in just a moment.
chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in to AgriTalk. We are pleased as punch to have you, your pal Davis Michelson here. Chip is still here.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't get weird. He's still here. So welcome back to AgriTalk. Great conversation there with Rich Nelson from Allendale. Chief strategist, right? Chief strategist?
Yep.
From Absolutely. Allendale. Now, you started the show, and I thought this was an interesting dichotomy because I feel like elements of both of what you guys said are acceptable, are arguable, okay? You were talking about, hey, this could be a big report day tomorrow. We're setting benchmarks. We've been looking at last year's for a year now and comparing numbers to that number that came out in May.
Yeah.
Rich Nelson says, we won't really know till August. It's a poster number from USDA that we're going to get tomorrow. Help me find my way to the middle ground of those two positions, please.
That is a great point. That's a great point. And I'm telling you right now that price action and attitude, among some big money that that comes to play in these commodity markets, is driven by, you know, where things started and where we are today.
Yes.
And when you take a corn carryover and cut it in more than half, when you take a bean carryover number and slice it by 4/5, that's going to have an attitude, that's going to have an impact on a lot of money that is playing in the commodity world. And in this case, it makes them want to get on the long side and stay there. Mm-hmm. Now, there will come a time again where, you know, we're looking for a 1.3 on corn carryover and 120 on bean carryover. And as time goes on and demand erodes and we produce big crops here and produce big crops in South America, and 1.3 turns into a 2.5 and 120 turns into, you know, 400. And that obviously would have the opposite influence on that money that is playing in the markets. It would give them the incentive to get on the short side of the market and stay there until, as Rich said, the fundamental story changes.
Right. Interesting that an interesting marketing strategy. I wouldn't go so far as to say was endorsed. An interesting marketing strategy was discussed. Lock the bin doors, weld them shut until they get the right price, but they don't know what that price is, Chip.
Right.
I couldn't believe I heard you even discussing that.
Well, you see, and we're talking about old crop. We're talking about old crop on that. Okay.
Well, because that was my other thought. What are you welding in there? I mean, there can't be that much old crop left at this point, for one.
That's exactly right. And that's part of the reason that the markets have done what they have done. We've said it many times. It's easiest for corn to rally. It's easiest for soybeans to rally when farmers basically don't have anything left to sell. So when you run out of sellers, as the conversation that we had, when you run out of sellers, it doesn't take that much aggressive buying to get that last buck and a half on corn. Mm-hmm. It just takes an unwillingness to sell. And so far, farmers are playing their part in that unwillingness to sell. So you take the natural sellers out of the market, you get a little bit of buying, and those that are looking to buy any dip that happens in the markets, and you get into these explosive type markets. Yeah, it's crazy, but it happens.
So if I happen to have some of that old crop still on hand, and say that percentage of my total crop produced, that percentage is less than 10%.
All right.
That I have left to sell.
Okay.
Would you say maybe it's appropriate to go full Kenny Rogers? Is that an appropriate time to just say, well, I kind of hit my marks?
Dude, I can't even made tell my, you because
my,
I...
The bulk of my sales, now let's let her run. Let's gamble a little bit. Got to know when to hold them, right?
Right, right. Yeah, you got to know when to hold them.
Is that ridiculous?
But I'm telling you, I can't even answer that question for you because if I was still doing it, if I was still advising producers on what to do, there's no way I'd have any left.
Right.
I mean, $6 would have gotten it out of my hands. Okay. And here we are at 7.5 in the May and 7.22 in the July. So,
and the end user's in a tough situation. End user's in a tough spot. Boom goes the basis yet two.
Yeah. Right. Right. This gets back to Scott Davis and actually John Davis, Scott's dad. Scott's with Bullpen Trading. Rule number one, you know, you make business decisions that keep you in business for next year too.
Right.
And selling $6 old crop corn in the cash market is the kind of decision that keeps you in business for next year and put some money in the bank. So
good advice.
Yeah, I probably...
That's solid. Solid stuff.
I probably would have been out of that old crop market a while ago.
I was hoping to do a little gardening this weekend. I put in some posts, and I need to get some fence put up.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the weather? I don't think I'm going to get it done this weekend. I think I got to get it done now.
I don't know if you're going to get it done this weekend or not, because we're going to have some warmer temperatures, but it looks like this weekend's going to see some rainfall coming in again, too. And then when we look out to the 6 to 10 day, May 17th through the 21st, we've got above normal temperatures expected across most of the country. We've got above normal precipitation expected over the central and southwestern growing areas or corn belt areas, okay? In other words, normal precip expected in Minnesota, South Dakota, and North Dakota, and northern Nebraska. Every place else in the corn belt is really looking at good chances for above normal precipitation May 17th through the 21st. So that the warmer temperatures are coming. And it's like we talked about with Michael Clark from BAMWX yesterday. There's going to be a more active weather pattern bringing us some better chances for rain as well. All right, for Davis and producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, Farmer Forum with Brad from Minnesota, Tim from Nebraska. Tomorrow afternoon, Davis and I are going to have the details of the USDA reports right here on AgriTalk.